Welcome to the F3, Female Forward Finance, a podcast dedicated to exploring the intersection of women, wealth, and power. I'm Jill Faraday Lloyd, a financial advisor at UBS Private Wealth, and my mission is to help women have agency with their capital and to align their wealth with their values. The F3 is a space for real conversation about money, power, and everything in between. Whether you're building a business, navigating a career transition, managing family wealth, preparing for a major life event, the F3 is here to arm you with insights, tools, and the assurance to make bold, confident decisions about your financial future. Because women aren't just inheriting, we're earning it. We're building it. And we are shaping what comes next in the world. And it's time we own every bit of that power. Let's dive in. Today, we're diving into the UBS Entrepreneur Report. This is a must read for founders scaling their businesses, making investment decisions, and preparing for exits. This UBS survey is the first of its kind. Powerhouse of insights, drawing data from 156 entrepreneurs across 26 countries, collectively managing $19.1 billion in revenue, with an average annual revenue of $123 million. These founders lead privately held businesses spanning consumer discretionary technology, including healthcare, utilities, industrials, financial services, and real estate. And to break it all down with us today, I'm joined by James Jack, head of the strategic client segment for entrepreneurs at UBS. James, welcome to the show.
Jill, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I wanted to just dive in because this report is really fascinating and it's the first of its kind from UBS. So maybe we just start with the reason why the firm created the report, and how do we see it serving founders who are navigating today's business landscape?
Well, I think, Jill, part of it is because entrepreneurs are really, really important for driving innovation and economic growth, but they're also overloaded with information. So we felt that entrepreneurs want trusted and clear insights from their peers, especially their peers. That's a big part of that. But not just, you know, any peer down the street, but those, you know, regionally as well as globally. And they want all that so that they can see what others are doing so they can get ahead of things. So this report really serves as a benchmarking tool. And it's about helping founders think through, compare their strategies, and assess market sentiment as well. That's an important part of this report. And then the last part is identifying new opportunities.
So we get the data, and how really do we use it to support entrepreneurs?
Well, it goes back to about how we're tracking their entrepreneurs' needs, their challenges, and how their strategies are evolving. So we, from a UBS perspective, we want to make sure that we're gearing what we're doing towards them. What's, you know, where is the puck going, so to say? So we want to make sure that we're providing the right expertise, financing solutions, advisory services, you know, at every stage of the journey. You said that you work with people before, during, and after their exit, right? So it's thinking about that whole journey, really.
Let's talk about some of the key sectors that we came to understand. The survey showed that 61% of entrepreneurs are optimistic about their industries in the next 12 months, rising to 86% being optimistic in over the next 5 years. What do you think is driving this long-term confidence?
Well, I think a big part of it is that if you're an entrepreneur, you generally are more optimistic because you kind of have to be. There's a lot at stake for you. But entrepreneurs generally, I think, are resilient and forward-looking, even during short-term challenges. So they're looking for strategic opportunities during those kind of upheaval times. Technology, including healthcare, like you mentioned, they remain a leading growth sector. along with industrial and financial services for the survey. And you know, something that isn't really no surprise to probably you or me, but Americans show the highest confidence at 71%, while Europe and Switzerland are more cautious, around 50% respectively. Americans just tend, I think, to be, American entrepreneurs specifically, tend to be just more optimistic. So that's kind of what's bringing it all together, I think.
It's a little uncertain right now in the United States.
Absolutely. And I think that comes down to is that founders don't just react to market shifts, they anticipate them. So they're always thinking kind of big picture where they need to be and where they need to go.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the concerns that they're optimistic, but clearly they have concerns. Would you walk through maybe the macro concerns and then we can go down to the micro?
Sure. Optimistic, but you know, but grounded in some sense of reality, right? From a macro perspective, I think over 12 months, they rank the policy and economic changes as their biggest concern. There's political instability. We just had our own election. There's elections in Europe, and what comes with some of those changes are some uncertainty. Higher taxes is 42% had listed that. That was the second area, which I would include probably the tariff threat is in there too, mm-hmm. Which is probably a real impact for our business owners, right? How to navigate that. And then the last one is the geopolitical conflicts at 41%. That's our third one. Of course, the war in Ukraine, still a concern and where that goes. So I think that's the big macro perspective across all of the regions, of course. You asked on the micro side. I think over the next year or so, about the greatest number, I think, was like 46%, cite concerns about changes in regulations and compliance requirements. And then maybe the next one, about 35%, worry about cybersecurity threats. Mm. That's a big concern for a lot of business owners.
Specifically, I would think in technology.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting to hear that entrepreneurs are concerned about climate. And I'm in my practice, I work with a lot of women who mm-hmm. are younger. I work with next gens, and their commitment to sustainability is greater now than ever. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to me to see that statistic.
The diversity of our entrepreneurship, the diversity of the group of entrepreneurs expand beyond traditional sense, into women and into younger people in general. I think those concerns come more into play, and I think that's when they begin to work towards solutions for those.
Longer-term solutions.
Yeah, exactly. So how can they build businesses that solve those issues?
So one of the key takeaways that I thought was interesting is that 51% of entrepreneurs plan to increase investments in the next year. And that is growing, again, to 86% in 5 years. So big focus on capital expenditures. Where is that capital going, according to the survey?
The biggest amount, Jill, is, especially in the United States and the Americas more broadly, is in personnel. 54% said they want to spend their capital and hiring people. I think you're starting to see that more and more. So
it's a tough employment market right now.
For sure.
Right?
It's definitely a seller's market in a sense, right? You mm-hmm. know, trying to be hired. Competition for great employees, at favorable costs is becoming more and more challenging to business owners.
Right, and investing in people means not just hiring them, but they have to create incentives and they have to train them. So I think we'll continue to see some interesting shifts in that. I'm going to steal one of your statistics.
Yeah.
But part of this focus on hiring is making sure that they're bringing in people who have the skill sets to scale up AI technologies.
Yeah. I don't think it's a surprise, Jill, that AI is a big part of this report. It's been the big topic for the last 18 months or so, and I'm sure it will continue for many more months. But business owners are looking to invest in technology writ large, 47%, but AI infrastructure is 45%. And the biggest area, region that was looking to invest in AI was Asia. But still, you know, across the board, it's a main focus. It's a main interest for, entrepreneurs and how they can leverage it, how they can get into that business, and really, improve the overall scalability of their business with AI, right? I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, AI is a really fascinating tool that can make them do so much more.
And what's the third area where the capital is moving on?
I think here, I'm not too surprised by this, Jill, but it's about thinking about who the proper partner or acquisition target is. I think a lot of the business owners that we surveyed, particularly, you know, they're fairly significant businesses. So I think they're looking, you know, for organic growth, of course, and that's probably where personnel and the AI and the technology comes in. But at a certain point, you also then need to begin thinking about inorganic growth. So that's where the M&A opportunity comes in. And after a few, let's say, down years, the last few years of M&A, I think more and more business owners are thinking about that as an opportunity for some of the inorganic growth side of things.
Well, certainly UBS came out with a report earlier in the year about an improvement in M&A and IPO markets. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, firsthand from many of the bankers that I work closely with that they've been very busy preparing for an increase in M&A, right? And so that was based on this notion that perhaps interest rates would come down, and we have this new administration that's in that, you know, regulation might also be reduced. So at least in the United States, where my clients are based, there, we started the year with this hope that there was going to be an onslaught of exits and liquidity events. We're not quite seeing that yet. In fact, January was one of the slowest months in M&A in ages. So maybe we're at the bottom. We'll see. But again, entrepreneurs are always optimistic.
Yeah, I think on that one, Jill, we've been talking about finding green shoots in M&A for the last 2 or 3 years, for sure. It's kind of funny, you know, as doom and gloom as some people could be, you know, even in the last 2 years where it was not as strong as 2021, it was still very strong if you look at in the last like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's all relative. But yes, I think there has definitely been slower in the last few years. And I think people now are thinking, okay, we have more stability in the rates, like you mentioned, whether or not they come down a lot or not to be determined. I think, you know, there's a changing view on we might be a little bit slightly higher for a little bit longer. I think as a result of that, ultimately private equity and some of these strategic buyers, they need to deploy some of the capital that they have, particularly in the private equity.
Yeah, I've never known a private equity firm to give money back.
Right.
So that money's got to go to work.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they're, you know, the tenor of some of those funds that they've raised is now reaching 4 or 5 years, and that's really the max it can really go. So I think, you know, there's got to be a switch at some point, and so I think that's what a lot of us are counting on in terms of that. But I think also with Trump coming in, I think that also does put some potential at ease at least on some of the tax planning standpoint of M&A. Not a guarantee by any means, but a lot of the tax issues that have helped drive the M&A boost of the last few years are set to expire at the end of this year. It's likely that some of those will continue in some way because of the Republican control. So again, who knows? It's, you know, there's no guarantee on anything. But that may take some of the urgency away for M&A and allow people to be more thoughtful and take some time. So maybe that might take a little bit longer. But, you know, I think a lot of people are being on the sidelines, and I think they're ready to go. So,
yeah. So this kind of leads to this next theme from the report.
Yeah.
Which is, if entrepreneurs are thinking about exiting in the next 2, 3, 4 years, one of the insights that stood out was that more than half of the entrepreneurs that we surveyed said they lacked a structured succession. Why is this such a critical gap?
Yeah. This is the story of my life. I feel like it's been a big focus of mine since we started the Business Owners Client segment here at UBS more formally almost 7 years ago. But I think it's that basically founders in particular they tend to be really laser focused on growth and delay leadership transition planning. It's human nature. It's something like, oh, that's down the road.
Right. It's the saber-toothed tiger.
Right.
You facing know? You. Got to survive the saber-toothed tiger. You're not thinking about future.
Right. Exactly. So, I think that's, you know, it's just human nature is the biggest, like, you know, no science behind that. That's my gut. But, you know, the specifics of the survey said 56%, they have a board with independent members, and 55% say that they do feel that they have a formal succession plan, at least for their senior leadership. Those are strong numbers. So I think that's a little bit about going with, you know, the types of clients who, you know, businesses that we surveyed. But the risk of that, so 55%, that might be strong, but that means 45% still don't have a plan. There's a big risk about not having that plan, and it could be around, you know, potentially losing, you know, the value of your business, continuity, investor confidence. You know, there's so many things that can go wrong at any time. And if you don't have a proper plan in place, you know, it could be a real significant harm to the business value. So that's why we say planning is nice because it puts you into an organization, but planning does for business owners have truly legitimate business purposes.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the reasons that we do this survey is to give us the insights of what our entrepreneurs are thinking about and they're actually doing. And when it comes to exits, right, founders often underestimate how complex this process can be. So the survey, fascinating, 55% of entrepreneurs say they turn to bankers, 52% seek independent counsel, and 44% work with consulting firms when they're planning an exit. So what does this tell us?
I think the most important aspect of it is that entrepreneurs, especially those surveyed in this report, they recognize that there's a lot at stake.
Yeah.
I often tell our clients and our financial advisors like you that a business transition may be the most significant financial event of their lives. You know, it's up there with marriage and having children. So it's critically important to build a team, a proper team, a fulsome team, and to not go it alone, right? You might only have one shot at this. So that's, I think, the most obvious thing that, for me, that comes out of it. But, you know, that's why we work with business owners and entrepreneurs to help them through their exit planning. And it's going to be us doing a lot of things, of course. You know, we help with planning, I mentioned, and we've got investment bankers to help with M&A advisory, and we can help structure some solutions. But then our financial advisor can help with personal planning. You know, will I have enough to live the lifestyle I want to live after this? But, you know, and it's more broad than that. A lot of our financial advisors, and, you know, Jill, I'm sure this is exactly what you do, right? Is it's who you know and who you can connect with, right? It's not just going to be you and an investment banker. It's going to be a lawyer. It's going to be a trust and estate attorney, maybe an insurance provider.
Transactional accountant.
Exactly.
Right. Valuation specialist.
You know, most business owners, they might have their personal attorney or whatever that they've been working with. But this is a huge event. So finding that level of sophistication is really, really important.
Yeah. There's a lot to consider when selling your business. So it's building your team. But I spend a tremendous amount of time working with my clients to help them come up with this vision of what their life is going to look mm-hmm. like after a transaction. And so we talk about the three legs of the stool of selling a business. And it's not just selling the business.
Right.
Right? It's one, maximizing the transferable value of your business. And you will do that with your advisors and your bankers, right? But then, two, you have to prepare financially for a lifestyle without the income from your business. Mm-hmm. So that's creating your own financial plan to make sure that when you exit, you're exiting tax efficiently. And then thirdly, the third leg of the stool is to plan personally for what you want to do in your next act after exiting your business. Fascinating. 70% of founders, of entrepreneurs, regret selling their businesses within a year because they didn't plan for their what's next, mm-hmm. or they didn't create a financial plan that sustained their lifestyle. So it's not just selling the business. It's selling the business, setting yourself up for financial success for a very long life, setting up your kids, your next gen, and it's figuring out how you want to spend your time. I've never met an entrepreneur that sits still very well, right?
No.
So they're going to have another business. They're going to have a charitable endeavor. They're going to travel, I hope. They're going to do wonderful things with their families. But those who don't create their what's next plan tend to be the most unhappy at their next.
Yeah, I agree. I like to tell a lot of, when I talk to our clients, I say your business probably has been generally three things. It's how you spend your time. It's your social life. And it's your purpose. That's why you get out of bed. And so when that is gone, what will replace that? Mm-hmm. And for some people, it's going to be, I'm going to travel more. I'm going to spend more time with my kids or my grandchildren, or I'm going to start a new business, or I'm going to be more focused on charitable endeavors. And those are all things that we looked at in this report. We confirmed some things that we for sure thought in that sense, but I think you hit it on the head, right? When you're talking about the planning you're doing, you're really thinking about those types of things. You're playing armchair psychologist in a lot of cases, right?
I do have a degree in psychology from my undergrad, but no PhD. Another interesting statistic, another interesting fact out of this or from the survey is that 42% of the founders of these multi-million dollar businesses, right? Mm-hmm. 123 million average revenue businesses, 42% said that they hadn't built enough private wealth outside of their business. So how should they be thinking about their personal wealth plan?
Well, something I find fascinating about that survey statistic, Jill, is these are UBS clients, right? So, and have very successful businesses. So
they're just not liquid.
Well, yeah. And so, but if a UBS client is answering this survey and saying, you know, only 40% of them think that they have enough of their actual, you know, regular wealth management, you know, taken care of, that's really strong, I think, but what does that mean for business owners and entrepreneurs who are outside of UBS, who don't have a financial advisor like you, right? Which many of them don't, because they're focused on the day-to-day of their business. They're not focused on the markets. So my guess is, more broadly, outside of UBS clients, that this number is much, much lower than 40%. So it might even be 20% or even less than that. So it really goes to show the importance of what you're doing, right? People like you, Jill, are doing to help these entrepreneurs think through their wealth and what does it mean that they can survive and live the lifestyle and lead out their goals, right? That you all talked about just before. So that all said, I think, you know, from a private wealth standpoint for what these business owners are thinking, they really want to balance their business reinvestment with their personal financial security.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, if they had a dollar to invest, they've been mostly putting that dollar back into their business because they feel like they generally have control over that, versus, you know, less control over the broader markets. I think now many of them are realizing, you know what, I need to get ready for the next phase, and so I need to start building that. So that's kind of the first part. And then I think, you know, what comes from that is diversifying.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of the statistics say 70-80% of a business owner's wealth is tied up in their business and, you know, their home. So
that's a lot in one basket. So as you're getting closer towards retirement, let's say, you're thinking about how can I diversify that. So 49% of the founders in this survey wanted to invest across different asset classes, and 47% are looking into more unique private investing, private equity, as an example, or even angel investing.
Well, because as an entrepreneur in a, let's say, in a growth industry, you're seeing some really, you're seeing some really interesting businesses come to you with solutions that help you grow your business. So it's not surprising that they're starting to think, okay, I know how to grow a business. I could see that this is an interesting founder with a really interesting product. I'm going to go away.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that, John.
And then, what are their thoughts about getting advice?
Well, it goes back to what we've been saying here is these founders particularly, they value advice. And I think in general, entrepreneurs do too, because they know they can't do it all themselves. So in our survey, 84% of entrepreneurs, they say they value financial guidance, and 74% consult advisors before making these decisions. I think that goes back to...
They know what they stick into their knitting.
To the, what they right? know, exactly. Yeah, I think that's right, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, I think let's just sort of wrap up here, James. I want to talk a little bit about future trends. So what are the top three things founders should focus on in 2025 based on what we learned from this report?
Absolutely. I think, so three things, just kind of going through it. AI, that's the big topic, of course. So how can you integrate AI and other digital transformation strategically? That's, I think, a big focus of what a lot of entrepreneurs in our survey are looking at. Also, we talked about succession and exit strategies. How do they develop those plans? How do they think through that? Maybe the most significant financial event of their lives. So really having that buttoned up and having a good team in place. And then the third part, really connected to that second one is balancing reinvestment with personal wealth creation. How do you think through your personal wealth? What will replace this business to help you live the life that you want for yourself, your family, your goals, the legacy you want to live?
Well, I know I'm going to continue to support founders on their journey, but what can we expect from UBS and the business owners segment?
Well, we're going to continue doing a lot with what we've been doing, which is finding data and then driving the insights from that. That's a big part of it. We're not making assumptions just on a few conversations. And then we're going to continue to focus on getting more expert advisory services out to our business owner and entrepreneur clients. That's what they're asking for.
Like what? What does that look like?
Well, I think it's navigating the tax journey that I talked about before. How does that change? How can you have secure perhaps some of the better net proceeds from an exit way of being tax efficient?
Mm-hmm.
How can you connect to M&A advisors so you can think about timing in terms of market? What are the strengths and weaknesses of your business so that if you've got some time ahead of you that you can begin working on that?
Actually, can we talk about that for a second? Because UBS is the largest wealth management firm in the world. And of course, we have this big investment bank associated with us. But what we've realized is that not all of our clients have billion-dollar businesses that are UBS investment banks. So we created a business within UBS called the One Bank, which is it's a network of 30 boutique investment banks fully vetted by UBS. You're familiar with the business.
Yeah. It's a great network of boutique investment banks across the country that focus on different types and sizes and industry verticals for different entrepreneurs. So, we might find that we've got a $25 million business. UBS Investment Bank, it's not the right fit for that client, right? So finding someone who focuses on that type of space, or that type of industry, or that type of geography, whatever it might be, hopefully then we can find a good solution to help that business owner find a potential acquirer, whether it's private equity or strategic buyer.
Can I tell a story around that? So
love
I was
it.
Approached by a founder of an interesting wealth management business. and she sort of stalled out in her growth because she couldn't raise capital. A woman of color. So female founders raise 2% of outside venture money, and women of color raise 0.4%.
Yeah.
So she's been trying to decide what her next step will be. And so she came to me and I said, let me introduce you to some of the banks within the one bank. And on a no-names basis, I took her company, the revenues, the EBITDA, the, you know, the unique technology that she had into the one bank. And I got five banks that were interested in meeting with her. She was shocked.
Right.
First of all, she would not know where to meet these bankers because they're all over the place, lower middle market bankers. And we did a, what I like to call a speed dating day, where we had, you know, one banker for 30 minutes, another. And so five bankers she met in one day, and she came back, she said, I like number one and number four. So number one and number four signed NDAs, and they came back and did full offered side pitch. Here is how we would position you. These are the buyers that we think would be interested in you. Here is how we would value you, and here is our fee. And because it was a competitive process, they were fee competitive.
Right.
It was like she couldn't believe how easy it was to get to the point where she could meet with these bankers. And they provided, so what she got was advice, right? Maybe you should wait another year. No, actually, maybe we've got some potential buyers. Here's the range. If you grow it another year and you get your revenue to XYZ, then you could probably sell for twice the amount. I mean, whether or not a transaction occurs, having that one bank has been a game changer for many of my female founders.
That's amazing, Jill. You know, it comes down to UBS. We know what we do really, really well, but we have partners and connections to help flesh out the team. On the M&A side, I mentioned, we just talked about the boutique banks, but you know, you have friends and partnerships across all different parts of the deal making environment, right? And selling a business, exiting a business is a team sport. It's really, really important to bring everyone together. And at the end of the day, you know, if things go really well, hopefully there's a lifelong relationship with you, Jill, as their financial advisor, with them and maybe their children and grandchildren to go on. So we're really, quote unquote, incentivized to do really well for our clients for the long term rather than just this one particular transaction. And so I think what UBS's value, what our financial advisors value, is thinking through the big picture, connecting the dots, and just being there for the client and helping see, oh, what does that mean for you? Okay, let's go back and let's make some adjustments, or let's really think about it. And if it can come down to a place that, let's say you think your business is worth $10 million, but you need $12 million to live the lifestyle you want to live, okay, well, we need to grow. But again, if it's $10 million and you only need $8 million, and someone comes in with an offer for $12 million, then you know, hey, as long as I like that person and I think what they're going to do for my company and my employees and my customers is okay, $12 million is a home run. Let's move forward.
Yeah.
It really changes how you can think through what is a very complicated and emotional series of months for an event to hopefully make it easier. It's never going to be easy, easier. And to speak for you, Jill, I see it with how you and your team connect with clients about bringing all of those solutions there. Not every financial advisor, across the industry, even at UBS, does that. They're really focused on markets. They're focused on what they do really well, really well. And it's not to say anything bad about them, but for business owners, it's something very unique. And there's not a lot of teams like you guys that are really focused on the pre-sale planning part so that you can help create a strong event. Because, as I mentioned, it's probably the most significant financial event of their lives.
Well, it is what I love to do the most. So thanks for recognizing that we are unique in our quest to work with founders and help them get to successful tax-efficient exits. James, this has been a fantastic. Thank you very much for being with me. But before we go, I want to Just, can you tell our listeners where they can find more details about the UBS Entrepreneur Report?
Absolutely. So, easy enough, visit ubs.com/entrepreneur-report. So ubs.com/entrepreneur-report. That has the full report. There's some additional resources tailored for founders there as well. So, and there's, you know, tons of other materials from UBS, I think. Go to jail. And there's other surveys, there's other reports that go through all of these types of things, and you know, we'll help you out.
Well, to all the founders listening, this report, it's more than just data. It's a strategic playbook to help you make smarter decisions, to help you scale successfully and to plan for the future. So thanks again, James. So glad to have you here.
Jill, it was an absolute pleasure, and I'm really, really appreciative that you spent some time to talk about the report.
That's it for today's episode of F3, Female Forward Finance. If you found this conversation valuable, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and more importantly, share it with another woman who could benefit. If you'd like to stay updated with insights, resources, and exclusive content, join my mailing list by emailing me at jill.lloyd@ubs.com. Until next time, keep building, keep growing, and let's make those financial dreams a reality. Onward.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.